Welcome to episode 8 of the First Stage Podcast. It feels good to be back. It's been like a while. And we had to take a few weeks off because of the pandemic, the COVID. I'm here with our guests, JJ Howell and Caleb Davis. Caleb, you got that fake disease. So why don't you talk about that for a second?
It was completely fake for me, but I know it's real for other people. I felt like it was like a tequila hangover. You're kind of good in a day, for at least for me. So I lucked out on, I guess, what it did to my body. I was good. So, but yeah, I tested positive for that sucker and had to quarantine and do that old song and dance. But we're here. I don't think I learned anything from it. I don't know how I got it. It just, hey, I don't feel that great. And then I went and got tested, and I was like, by the time I got tested, I was already fine. And I was like, "What? Well, what do I have to do now?" And they're like, "Well, you got to quarantine." I was like, son of a bitch.
Got to stay home and watch cartoons for 2 weeks. Okay, yeah. Fine. Damn.
Fine, twist my arm.
Can you give it to me?
I think I've got like, there's like one pillow that I still, we couldn't fit the pillowcase into the wash for like the room that I occupied. I could give it to you, and you could like just hang it over your head for a little while. I don't know how long
that'll work.
Might work.
Something will happen.
Yeah, you get something.
Yeah, we'll be fine.
For the people that don't know, we're basically in the hot spot of Texas for the COVID. So you know, we're really crushing it.
Yeah,
you know?
We're breaking records.
Our numbers are. It's just like, we have a bunch of college kids and a bunch of people who think that not wearing a mask is a statement. So, you know,
I mean, we've had a 20-year championship record of syphilis. So,
yeah,
it's right up our alley of just not like knowing the facts, but not really respecting them at all.
Yeah, we can't do anything about the syphilis rate, but we got COVID.
That's right.
We're just trying to, it's like Pokemon, we're trying to collect them all. But
I mean, my problem is I just kind of always feel like shit, so I feel like I've had COVID for like 6 months now.
I could really see you just like, you know, if you're just kept to your own devices, like, if you didn't have a whole lot going on, you definitely would have had it by like 12 times by now. You'd be like, oh, I've got COVID for sure.
Yeah.
Like, and someone has to tell you, like, JJ, you're fine, you don't have COVID.
Well, I've been tested 3 times.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. It's more than me. Just testing.
Like,
the
I just
time.
Go to work and they're like, you look like shit. Go get COVID tested. I'm like, oh, thank you.
It's like my work's got a great COVID testing plan. It's just like, I could just be tired. It's like, nah, it's COVID.
No. Yeah. JJ, stop at the door. You look like an asshole. Get the fuck out of here and go get COVID tested.
It's like, okay, whatever. I'll see you guys in 4 days. Thank you.
So we are here with JJ Hal. So let's go ahead and get your intro song going.
JJ's gonna make you howl. Right now. JJ Howl is on First Stage. Yes, he's on First Stage right now.
Did you like that?
Yeah.
You couldn't tell. I've been watching a lot of Westworld with that, like, the progression. I was like, I'm going to play it on the piano. Da, 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 da. And then I just got lazy, and I was like, we're just going to loop that. And
then you're like, I'm just going to whisper his name, which I think personifies me, because I don't really...
Well, wasn't that your Facebook name for a while? JJ's going to make you howl,
or
whatever?
JJ will make you howl. And it was that for like almost 3 years, and then someone's like, I think this is fake. And then Facebook's like, can we see your ID?
Oh, no.
And I sent him a picture of a fake McLovin ID that I used to carry around all the time, and I sent that to Facebook. And they sent me a message. They're like, nah, seriously, let's see your ID, or we're going to shut down your entire Facebook. And I was like, oh, okay.
Sorry, I didn't know this was real.
And I had to convince them to let me have JJ because my name's Jonathan. So I had to like.
Well, I didn't know that they were that strict about that.
Well, because that's what's on my ID. So they're like, well, that's not your real name. I was like, come on, everybody knows me as this.
Right. Yeah. It's going to go from like everyone's like, ha, it's kind of a clever name, to be like, no one knows who you are. Yeah. Like, who the hell is
they're
Jonathan?
Like, they're like, Sting, you got to change your Howell? Facebook Gross. Name. That's not your real name.
Yeah.
You've been doing comedy with us for a few years. You had me look at your Facebook videos to find an early recording, so I kind of pulled this off your Facebook. Okay. I wrote down a note of when I did this, or when this happened, based on the thing. It was April 29th, 2016. Can you talk a little bit about this night and how you kind of got into comedy?
Sure. I don't know. That's a lot. That night was weird. Just a weird part in my life, period. How I got into comedy, I've always liked comedy. My dad was a huge fan, so I grew up listening to everything all the time. You know, he always had specials on Carlin, Eddie Murphy, Robin Williams, everybody. Huge Jeff Foxworthy fan, as well as like Tim Allen. So like, I always grew up with like kind of that raunchy comedy style. And
did he like the sitcoms too? Like the Home Improvement stuff. Oh, yeah,
Home Improvement, the Jeff Foxworthy Show, Roseanne, all that shit. We watched it constantly. But the way I got into comedy is I got dragged actually to a first Friday art show with this girl that I was seeing. And we walked by Giorgio's Pizza on the way to my friend's tattoo shop that she worked at. I had no intention of seeing comedy, didn't even know it was there. And someone was like, they're doing comedy in the basement. And the girl I was with was like, oh, that sounds fun. Let's go check it out. And I was like, that doesn't seem weird to you.
Let's go down to the basement, you know?
Yeah, let's go to this basement. So I was kind of intrigued, so I went down anyways. And Socorro was there, which I've known Socorro for years. I knew him for years before this. And I watched you, Caleb, that night. And I think I saw you as well.
I remember doing one or two shows there, yeah.
Yeah, and I was talking to Squirrel. I was like, oh, man, this is cool. And he was like, you're a funny guy. You should write some jokes and come do comedy because that's how you become a stand-up comedian.
that's it, word of mouth.
Yep. That's it. You know, someone's just like, you're funny. You could do this. And then you get that false sense of security that you can. And you're like, sure. And he was like, you know, Thursday, you know, come out to backstage. You know, it'll be fun. I was like, okay, cool. You know, I'll see what I can do. So I spent some time writing, you know, and we went out on Thursday, went to the open mic. I fucked up because I told Socorro that I'd wrote some jokes, but I didn't sign up on the list. I was like, I just want to watch. And Socorro called me on stage, and he was like, have fucking fun. And I was
wow, just throwing to you the wolves there.
And I told him, I was like, I don't want to do this. You know, I'm not going to. And he was like, well, you can either do it or you can just look like a huge asshole. Which he knew would like hit my anxiety because I was like, ah, shit, now all these people are going to think I'm supposed to be funny and expect me to tell jokes. So now I just got to fucking do it. So, and I actually forgot all my jokes. I left my phone at my house with all my jokes on it. So,
The worst feeling in the world.
Yeah. So I had to pull all the jokes I wrote out of my brain for the first time ever.
On stage with a live mic. That's fun.
Unexpected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Learning between thrown to the wolves out there and just like shooting from the hip or
at
whatever.
At the end of the night when everybody's trashed. So that was just the best. I was just
right. Like, so if you even have like a small amount of rhythm to something that you're saying and have something funny at the end, they're going to be like, oh, yeah, this guy's the funniest thing
ever.
Yeah,
I was
they'll just be like, fuck this guy, boo.
Well, I wasn't really, I don't know what I was expecting.
Yeah.
I was just hoping someone laughed. Like, I knew, I was like, I can be successful as long as someone laughs. I'll be fine. And I think people laughed. You were there. I know both of you were there.
Yep.
It backstage the week before that.
Oh, okay. So this is the following week.
Yeah, the following week. So that was actually the video you have is my second time backstage ever.
So you obviously, after the first time, you're like, oh, I'll come back and do this again. You weren't concerned or whatever about the first time, whatever, because some people just will do it once and then they're like, oh, I don't want to do this anymore.
Well, it was really Caleb, honestly, because I got off stage and just kind of, you know, walked over towards Socorro and like, I don't know why I didn't go back to the table with my girlfriend. I just instinctively walked back to where all the comedians were. I was like, I did comedy. I'm one of y'all. So
yeah,
let me
that's like,
assert myself over here.
That's like the best part about it and stuff is like getting becoming like instantly friends with people or whatever just because you're doing it. Like I did a show in Iceland and like these guys barely talked to me and then they saw me on stage. It was like, hey, come to this after thing and stuff. Like, and so it was just cool to,
It's like a little Yeah, you get entry into this whatever weird area we're standing in to bullshit with if you go up and do a set.
And you were just like, wow, that was your first time. That was really good, man. Like, oh, my God, that was great. And then I'm pretty sure, I was like, can I get a cigarette off of you? Like, I didn't say thank you. I was just like, I need a cigarette. And you're like, yeah. And you handed me one. I was like, oh, sweet, thank you, you know. And then I was just like, oh, that was fun, you know. And you're telling me about all the other shows and Laugh Up City. And I was like, oh, that's great. And, like, the rush and the energy from it. Because, like, my first time went really well. So that's the other weird part is completely, you know, kind of blindsided, unprepared. Just it went really well. I don't think if it went bad, I wouldn't be here.
Think it was that delicate of a situation?
I think my wife at the time was that delicate to where if like I just took that L, I'd be like, that's right, I'm a piece of shit. I can't do anything. So like I wouldn't have done it. But like honestly, that moment that night, like that response, because it was so positive.
Yeah,
it actually gave me a lot of direction for the following week where shit was just terrible. And then everything after that, it really helped because all I knew, a lot of bad shit happened. Everyone's like, oh, what's going on? I tried to kill myself like 4 days after my first time doing stand up, which I was like, I did comedy and I'm successful. It's time to kill myself.
Going out on top. I'll see you later.
Going out on top. But a lot of bad shit was just going on. And luckily, I had a lot of friends step up, and, you know, one of my friends was like, you know, hey, go do comedy. Like, you're funny. You know, you need to get your mind off something. Go do comedy. And I wrote some new jokes, and I did them at this open mic. That's the video that we have. 2 days later, I moved to San Antonio. And then a week after this, I did my first open mic in San Antonio at the LOL Comedy Club. And that opened a ton of doors. That really helped me out.
Yeah.
Throughout. So it was like, but without that first moment when everything was like dark in my world and everything seemed really shitty, you know, I had friends telling me, hey, you're funny. You're funny.
Yeah.
Tell your jokes. Write your jokes. And when I was staying with one of my friends, she wouldn't leave me alone, but she was like, hey, what are you writing? Tell me that joke again. How can we make that better? You know, she distracted me from everything that was going on by reminding me, hey, what's with this joke? Hey, what are you going to wear to this? Hey, let's go buy you a new shirt. Dude, I bought the gayest shirt ever to wear for my first time. I wore, like, these horrendous orange pants and this gay blue shirt. Like, I looked like the gayest.
Orange and blue. Like,
like the gayest Denver Bronco fan ever. Like John Elway.
John Elway. Yeah. Like an 80s John Elway? Like in the bright orange?
Yeah, really shitty 80s John Elway. And, but, like, once I got to San Antonio, you know, I was really cocky, too, because I was like, I'm the best comic from Lubbock, because nobody fucking knew where Lubbock was, so you kind of said whatever you wanted. And so I was just like, I'm the best, and like, they called me on my bullshit real fast. They're like, no, you're not. But, and then I met Alex Angel, and he was like, but you can be, and he really took me under his wing and, you know, taught me a lot, and eventually I made my way back.
Yeah.
And it's been...
Well, that's a crazy, like... ascent, like, from like, all right, I did two open mics, now I'm moving to San Antonio, and then you're playing at like an actual club there versus like what we kind of have set up here, which is like a bunch of ragtag open mics at random bars. No, I mean, it's not we have a schedule and whatnot, but we have no functioning comedy club here. So
I'm sure
it just went from being like, oh shit, he just called my name, then you had what, one set here in Lubbock, and then you moved
two sets here in Lubbock, and then I moved. Yeah,
and then it's like, all right, I'm kind of in the real deal here.
Yeah, I went up 15th at the LOL Comedy Club for my third set ever, and then afterwards I was talking again. All the comics were like, again, it wasn't. My issue was is at the beginning, I don't know if I was. I never really know if I'm actually funny, but like it worked and it got people's attention.
Right,
and people were like, "Hey, you're not bad." So, you know, and that's when I started getting advice because people were like, hey, do this instead, you know, and that's, but then it was like, hey, they got this mic over here at Rebar on this night. You want to come out, you know, and I met people that are like, hey, we'll give you a ride. I live right next to you. Let's go. So I met a lot of people doing two or three mics a night, which just, you know, in Lubbock, that's a 4-year career in 6 months.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
True that.
Yeah. Well. Okay. Let's go ahead and get into this second time at Backstage. Here we go.
North Carolina. Mostly because I'm just scared of what bathroom to take you to. It's horrible. So confusing. His sister is absolutely amazing. She is my princess. I love her with all my heart. She is the meanest 6-year-old you'll ever meet. I swear to God. I'm pretty sure she got the bitch gene from her mom. Thanks, Kate. You can tell who likes who in this room. She's a nightmare. This little girl will just rip your soul apart with the sweetest words ever. She gives Regina George nightmares at night. I'll give you an example. I went out to lunch with one of my friends. We went to a classy restaurant called McDonald's. As we were sitting down, enjoying our chicken nuggets, I started catching up with my friends.
That lead in.
And I guess my daughter had plans that day, and I didn't fucking know about them. And so she tells me, she says, "Hey, yeah, you need to hush and finish your food." I looked at her and I said, "No, you can't tell me what to do. You're not my real mom." And that's where I fucked up, because she looked at me and her eyes just pierced into my soul. And she got this nice, cute little smirk on her face. And she's like, "Yeah, because your real mom's dead." Yes, I learned my lesson. I shut the fuck up and finished my damn chicken nuggets. After that, decided I wanted to get out of the Play Village, I wasn't going to ask any questions. I wasn't going to tell her no. And so we go to the Play Village. She's taking off her shoes. She goes to climb onto the Play Village. And this poor little boy did not get the message of who he was about to fuck with. He decided to push my daughter on the ground. And she was not happy about it. She stood up and she said, "Hey, you need to tell me you're sorry." He had the balls to tell her no. I was kind of impressed, but I also felt bad for the poor bastard. I did nothing to stop it at this point. I wanted to see where this was going to go. So my daughter gave me a second warning. "Hey, you need to stop and tell me you're sorry." Well, he still didn't get the fucking message. He decided to start laughing and told her no again. So my daughter gave him a third warning and said, "Hey, stop laughing at me and tell me you're sorry." And before he could say no, my daughter balled up a fist and punched him straight in the face and just dropped it. I was so proud. I immediately jumped up and was like, "Hey, princess, you can't hit people." And then I noticed the kid's father run over. And then I was kind of concerned because he was big. And so I looked at my daughter and said, "Thanks, you're about to get my ass kicked." And then he came over and I was trying to apologize. I was like, "I'm so sorry when my daughter punched your kid." And he said, "No, he's a little prick, he deserved it." I said, "Awesome, you want a McFlurry?" He said, "Yeah." So we walked in, so we walked his kid in the car and enjoyed some ice cream. It was a great afternoon. Yeah, I'm probably pretty awkward up here. I haven't been doing this that much, but I'm awkward all the time. I'm really awkward, you know, yeah. Especially when it comes to things in the bedroom. I've always had a lot of trouble.
I don't remember this.
Mostly when it comes to talking dirty, I just don't get it. Like when I lost my virginity after your about a 30-minute game of "Is It In Yet?" You probably experienced this the other day. You know, you're sitting there like, "Is it in?" "No." "You sure?" "Yeah." When I finally did get in, I had that one thought, you know, that goes through everyone's mind when you get inside a woman. But I had the nerve to say it out loud. I said, "Oh, geez." Oh, when you say "oh geez" when you're having sex with a girl, that shit will stay with you for the rest of your life. Like, you're pretty much just fucked at that point. So I decided, you know, I'm not going to try to talk dirty anymore. I'm just going to stay quiet. So it just didn't work out. And then my ex-girlfriend was talking to me one day, and she was saying stuff, and I wasn't listening, something about I need to pay attention, and blah, blah, blah. I don't care about your feelings, blah, blah, blah. I could suck my own dick. You know, continued on. So, you know, I tried to work on getting my dirty talk for her, and made a lot of improvements. I learned to ask questions, like, does that feel good? And, why are you crying? I'm still working on the ending, though, because when I finish, I have a lot of trouble. I'm usually like, oh, Boston Red Sox. Soon I'll get that down. But thank you guys for laughing. I enjoyed it. That's my time. You guys have a great night.
Yes. All right. Start with the kids going to the OGs. Is that a premature ejaculation joke?
I have no fucking clue. I don't even remember that joke. Like, parts of it were really good, though.
Well, like there was elements of, like, stuff that you still do around talking about your kids and stuff. Yeah. Like your mom's dead. Like, I remember that one.
That's
always
the first joke I ever wrote, and I think I'll probably always keep it in rotation.
It seems to always get a good response.
Joke. Yeah. I mean, I wrote that joke like 4 months after my mom died. So it was just like, and my dad, first time my dad ever saw me do stand up, I did that joke. And he's just fucking livid to this day.
Oh, yeah? He hates it? Oh, I thought you were going to be like, my dad loves that joke.
No, not at all. My dad fell asleep during my set.
But he woke up to that part.
Yeah. And afterwards, I was like, what'd you think? He's like, you think it's funny making fun of your family? And I was like, yeah, we're pieces of shit. Like,
it's like, hey, this is good. You're angry right now. This is part of accepting the fact that I'm going to be making fun of y'all for a long time.
Yeah. I was like, you know, remember all those trips in your semi-truck around the country for weeks at a time where I listen to people talk about how terrible their fucking families
you're
are?
You're like Richard Pryor talks a lot about his family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, so why is this a surprise? I thought she'd be proud of me. Like, but oh well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I figure my family's like, it's like, hey, at least you're talking about us, you know? It's just like, it just doesn't seem like we're that close. It's like, oh, you do care to make some jokes.
Yeah. Well, see, I've pissed them off so much that they don't care. So now I can really say whatever the fuck I want. And like,
that's nice.
Yeah. So they're like, I don't really give a fuck about their feelings. So.
Yeah, there are a lot of elements in this that, like you, like family with you is a common theme and stuff, and like a lot talking about your kids a lot, and it seems like you go there a lot, and it's cool to listen to that and see how it started. You kind of stay around the same material or whatever, and
talk about what you know,
right? Yep,
I know about kids and fucking. That's about all I got, and death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you want to see JJ, that's what he's going to hit on.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. If you want to be uplifted, go out to JJ.
Well,
house.
Yeah, and I mean, I just, I mean, like with you, like you can tell, like you're onto something. You've got 4 or 5 jokes there with good punchlines, and they're like you're just kind of ironing out the punchlines and like shortening them up. Like you're just going, Jesus Christ, like get to the fucking material.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Quit. Like, who gives a shit if you're at at McDonald's? Like, I was at this real classy restaurant. Maybe y'all know it, Mickey D's.
And you're like, your face during that, where you're like, God damn it. Like, why did I let myself open the joke that way? But
I don't,
everyone does it. Everyone goes through
it's
it.
It's like 90%
like,
of people
you're
on
like,
here. Why on earth did I think that I needed to start with that? Like, you're not opening a paper. People know what you're there. Like, you don't have to, like, have a introductory paragraph to let people know what you're doing. Like, hey, here's
I was
the next
eating
comedian.
A sandwich, as people do.
If I was me now, and that was somebody else doing that set like that, that would be one of those times where I walk out and smoke a cigarette.
Yeah, like, I had nothing to hear here.
I'm like,
JJ from the future walks out on JJ from the past. It's like, I don't even listen to this. That's always a bad thing. It's like, you can always tell when like comics are like, have heard this guy so much or like don't like somebody. They're just like, oh, time to go have a cigarette break. Like,
yeah.
I think my issue is like, I mean, you watch a lot of comedy and listen to a lot. I know, Aaron, you do as well. I don't.
I don't really listen to a whole lot.
Yeah, I've used to watch, you know, every special on Netflix when it came out, you know, constantly listening to stuff on Spotify, but now it's nothing at all. And I find myself when I listen to people, especially like I'll get on binges and I'll be like, next time I'm on stage, you know, I just sound just like Mitch Hedberg, you know, or like I'm doing like Anthony Jeselnik timing. And
like, so like the stylistic of the last comedian or somebody that you've listened to, you kind of pull into your own set, kind
like
of.
Yeah, like it gets into my
I've found myself doing that at times whenever you like, especially if like you listen to something like on the way to your show or like,
yeah,
that like either even whenever you're like writing material or you're just like kind of sourcing a little bit.
Yeah.
If you're listening to something, I think that that's what our brains do. They just take in that either rhythm or like the way they deliver the punchline or anything like that. And they, you know, I think that that's, I think it's pretty common.
Yeah. Yeah. And when I was, and back then, like those jokes I wrote, when I was writing, I would write the entire joke, like, verbatim, like, every single word, like, and then when I'd get on stage, I'd try to remember every single word, which got me rambling, and then when I moved away, when I came back, it was like, I learned, like, points, you know, like,
sure,
I know where the joke's going, I know where I need to say, but, like, just, you know, when I'm writing, I don't write the whole thing down.
No. Yeah, I've tried that once or twice, and I can't do it. I just have to, I like write a set list, and it just says like car wreck, and then I'll just figure a way to get to the joke I want to talk about, getting into a car wreck about. But
yeah,
right. Yeah, I think that that's, and I think for like, I think that that's more of like a veteran thing that like you get more comfortable, and you know that you don't have, you're not boxed into what this joke is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, you have, all right, I've got my lines in here that I know I need to hit, and it kind of keeps it open. If maybe you see something in the crowd, you can try to kind of throw it in there. Yeah. Someone's interrupts, or it just gives you angles in which you can kind of interact or have some sort of throw in with someone else maybe said something, but it's not, like, set in stone, so you can be adaptive to how the set's going or how the night's even going.
Yeah, that was, listening to that was cringy just because it was like, why did I, like, that was only two jokes.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I mean, that's two jokes. That was 5 minutes. And, I, like, now, in 5 minutes, I could probably tell, like, eight jokes, you know? Like,
right.
I can fly through 5 minutes easy. I could tell both of those jokes and probably three more,
yeah,
know, and still have time easy just because I've figured out how to, like, chop it down. But also, I wouldn't do those jokes back-to-back anymore either. I've learned,
yeah,
you know, how to structure my set, you know. And I do like to talk about my kids. I think that's something that's always, again, talk about what you know. It's something that's really easy. But I think it's either relatable because I always say things about my kids that you don't hear people saying a lot. I mean, you hear comedians talking about it, but I just straight up, I'm like, fuck them kids.
Yeah, right.
You know,
yeah.
Like, fuck them. You know, I mean, obviously I love my kids, but fuck them. You know, I
hate
them at the same time. And I play that across and people are just like, oh shit, this guy's, but then I know better not to be like, if I'm gonna talk about fucking, I should probably do it before the kids, because you know, fucking comes before kids.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it's kind of, you, nobody wants to be like, oh, his kids are funny, and then they want to think about my dick.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I have to think about my kids. Like, think about my dick first, then
you
want to
save
kids.
Yeah, the more risky stuff towards the end. Yeah,
yeah.
Figure out what came first here.
Yeah. And that's, you know, and that's probably, and dude, it was just so long. I was just fucking rambling like I am right now. But
yeah, like, well, I mean, like, cringeworthy is basically the tagline for the show because, like,
right,
the whole idea is like, nobody starts out solid and, like, you know, perfectly tight. And it's just, it's fun to revisit those things, like, those, where you pretty much everyone here, like, when they have to listen to their own set, they're just like, oh my God, shit, I gotta, why am I even saying this? Where am I going? You know?
Yeah, it can be pretty tough to, like, dig into some older sets and listen to yourself because it's like, I don't know. There's some things that, like, you, like, specifically remember, like, feeling good about it. And then you go back and listen to it and you're like, what the fuck is this? Like, none of this is any good. Why was anybody, like, what the hell? I can't even salvage anything
and
from
this. Yeah, and I think the part is like, obvious, you've been doing it. How long were you doing it before I showed up?
I think that tape is from, or the, not the tape. It was not a tape. It was a DVD, though.
The DVD that you had to find a way
to
rip.
that was 2012. I think I've been doing it 8 years.
Yeah.
That was in 2012, and then it was, like, kind of a year of, like, before anything really even happened in Lubbock.
Yeah.
And then I started jumping on a little bit
then I'm thinking that's about right.
Okay, so you have about 4 more years than I do.
Yeah.
Roughly. Okay, so yeah, that makes... that. I think that was what, you know, really helps out a lot, is like, you know, you and Aaron and Steven and Socorro, you guys have all... you were all doing this before, so you weren't necessarily looking at, like, wow, these are polished jokes, but, like, wow, this guy actually... put jokes together, you know. It was like, wow, for some first time, this is, because I mean, we've all, I mean, I've hosted plenty of open mics where guys just walk up there and they're just like, all right, this is my first time doing stand-up.
Right.
Let me tell you a joke. Why'd the chick cross the road? You know, it's like, God, dude, come on.
Yeah.
You know, and they start doing bar jokes and stuff like that. But like, I get that now, you know, since I've been in it for a while, you know, I see people who do, you know, comedy and they're, when they come out with something, it's like, man, that was really good. And you know, it's like, you know, it's okay.
But yeah, but for your first,
first time, like, you're on it. You know?
Yeah.
And I also, I just wonder if we instinctively do that because we need comedians. And so other comedians are like,
yeah, I mean,
they're like, we need you in the cult. So no matter how bad they suck,
I know that I don't really like.
I mean, like, well, I think I'm like, I'm big on encouragement in the beginning because, you know, like there's always untapped potential. And when somebody like goes in,
how
like,
long's your grace period before you're like, get your shit together?
Like five mics or something, you know?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I mean, don't know. Like, it's just if someone really does, I guess, show up and like, it's impressive.
Yeah.
Like. And I guess, I mean, you're going to find so many people, and it's just like every once in a while, I don't even know, you could have caught me on a weird night where I was just paying attention to your set. I don't always listen to everybody, but I think it was like, dang, he got my attention, and he got me to laugh a couple times. I was like, this is pretty impressive for this guy's first time. So I just know that if you were going to go there, I was going to say something, but I felt like... also, like, as an ambassador to the scene, it's like you want to talk to everybody at least that does
agreed.
Go up first.
Yeah.
But you also have different stuff. Like, I wouldn't just like blowing smoke up here. I'd be like, yeah, that was really fucking funny. Like, we've made that mistake.
we've
blown
some smoke up people's asses before.
But that was more or less like for selfish reasons. It was like this
we got
so bad
we got
to
see him again.
To come back.
Yeah.
And so we can sit in the corner and be like, holy fuck, this person is insane.
Yeah, there's nothing better than a person eating shit on stage and then it's just like then not aware that they're like they think they're just crushing it.
It was a cruel little thing.
I think
the it was funny still
thing
funny.
Is like,
it's like we needed something.
They were getting laughs from us, that's for sure.
Yeah, me and Aaron were losing it.
Oh, man. I think, Caleb, you've always been around, though, like in that scene. So, like, I always look towards Caleb and Durbin, you as well, but, like, you've always just kind of been around. You were there at my worst set ever at Nick's. That was, it was 10 minutes and nobody laughed at anything. And you I was about 4 minutes in dying and you actually, only time you've ever done this to me ever, you walked up to me and you like leaned in. You're like, you good?
You want to tap out here?
Yeah. You're
like, it's not going good.
It was like the manager walking out to the mound. Like, all right, man, you've hit 9 batters. Like,
it's time. It's like, hey man, you're scheduled to pitch the full 9. Just making sure that, you know, we don't need to forfeit this thing.
And I just looked at you. I was like, no, I got this. And I'm like,
in your defense, that's a shitty room. Like, that was like 40-foot ceilings. Yeah. There's no walls.
It was
a
terrible decision by myself to take that gig.
I don't drink. But after I got done with that show, I walked off the thing and this guy walked up to me. He's like, I'm going to buy you a drink. And I was like, I don't drink. He was like, yeah, you need a beer. And I was like, yeah, you're right. Like, let's
Thank
do
you for
this.
The beer.
Thanks. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to think. I've never saw your first time. I need to watch the video or listen to the podcast so I can.
Yeah, it was like, I don't know. I'm like all over the place. Super jacked. It was like a show, and they just pulled random numbers out of a hat, and I had to go first right
Where
after the
it
intro.
At?
It was in Long Beach, California,
okay.
And it was like a paid. It was like
the
we didn't get paid, but
it was like
a comedy class, and then we put on a show for the class. So it was like everyone's like family and friends there. But
so
I mean,
you paid to go to comedy class,
right?
And then you had to do a show for your family and friends, like a recital.
Pretty much, yeah.
So you did a comedy recital.
Yep,
that's adorable.
Yeah, it was pretty adorable.
Oh my gosh.
It was pretty bad.
Oh man, I want to go to one of those.
I don't think you do.
I want
to. I really just want to show y'all the Gilbert Gottfried impersonation guy. Like the guy came, like he.
Oh, is everyone on your DVD? Like
The whole show's on there.
Oh yeah, that'll be a fun night. We'll have to do that sometime.
Yeah, you do need to watch.
I just hope it's not so scratched that we can get something off of it.
Because I would love to see a guy like, totally try to be like, Gilbert Gottfried.
Like the guy who taught the class, and it wasn't like I like went out there to sign up for a comedy club. Like I went out there to get the fuck out of Lubbock, and my stepsister was like, "You're not gonna sit around playing with your dick all day." Like I signed you up for this comedy class.
Okay, so
at the community college, and I was like, "You're doing this," and I was like, "All right, I'm doing this."
But why was that her thing? Why wasn't she like, "By the way, I got you an application for McDonald's"?
Well, because I was already doing some work with a family friend. Like I was doing wash downs on boats and like scraping fucking barnacles in the ocean. It wasn't great, but you could get really fucking high and like go like take like 4 hours washing boat and like
sold.
Hey, you only have 2 gigs today, or you only have 2 jobs today. It pays in cash.
She's trying to save your creative soul. It's just like you got to do something so you don't wake up. It's like you're too comfortable in this barnacle smoking weed job.
Oh, yeah,
like you can do this for 20 years and not care.
And I like how she thought comedy was the route. She's like, you know what? You're smoking a lot of weed and scraping barnacles. Comedy's going to get you out of that.
Well, it was kind of like the part of encouraging the deal.
You or whatever. Yeah.
As soon as you get out here, you're going to stay busy.
So how was the course?
It was really strange. I mean, it was like the guy who put it on. I mean, it was fine. I met some friends and stuff like that. But it was like the guy who put it on, his name's Jonathan Schwartz. He's been on.
Is he on Letterman or something?
Yeah, he's been on Letterman a few times. He was like he semi almost made it like in the 80s.
Okay.
But so he toured a little bit and like he was the teacher of the class, and so like he, you know, he's just going over like concepts and stuff and whatever.
That makes sense.
It was fine. It was like almost like a 8 week deal. You go twice a week. Pretty much on Tuesday, you like work on, all right, tell this, we're going to go on and talk about the jokes, and then we're going to write them, and then we'll go over them on Thursday, and you just kind of keep going.
Gotcha.
And everybody would go around and like do that type of stuff. And then at the end, we put on the show, and then like he headlines it. And like before the show, he's like, you know, like as we're writing for the show, he's like, you know, I'm just want to let you guys know, like, you know, I'm writing for this show too. Like I'm coming out with all this fresh material for the show. And we're like, oh, that's pretty cool. He's writing it with us.
Yeah.
And we get there and like he does like his exact set that's on Letterman that he showed us like at the beginning of the set. Like he's doing like 1988 like, jokes.
Like Ronald Reagan jokes. Or...
Well, it was like, you know, I'm trying to think of one of them, but it was just like a girl like waking you up in the morning after a one night stand or something. And it's like,
you know, when your pager goes off.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like, unless you know the weather, the traffic report and something else, shut the fuck up and go back to bed. Like, gotcha. Why are you waking me up? I don't know. That was pretty much it.
Did you have a formal education, Durbin?
In comedy?
Yeah.
No, it was just, I mean, my education was through listening to podcasts, just kind of like before I was a fan of like listening to comedy podcasts before I went in. And then it was just a opportunity meets like preparation, I guess, because there were no places to do open mics here. And I think it was the second one, Adam Hernandez posted it, and it was at a... It was at Jake's back room, and so I did it that first time, and I'm like, this wasn't the worst thing. I'll try it again, and then I just kept doing it. And, yeah, you like, probably those first five mics in a row, just eating shit, and then like, you get a little bit. You get, like, a one laugh, or you get something, and you get a little bit more, and then you get an applause break, and then you just kind of keep building it and kind of figuring it out as you go. But I kind of had a good understanding just from listening to people talking about how they got into comedy and their first time, and like
that makes sense.
But that's what we're trying to do. We're educating the people of, you know, the Lubbock comedy scene.
That's right.
And how it's starting off.
Well, have we educated anybody?
I think so.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe.
Like, we'll get into the random questions. We always like to hit up a few questions for our guest here. JJ, you like to talk about your family. Which, you have some kids. Which is your favorite? Which is your favorite child?
Yeah, how many kids, their ages, and then like...
Oh, man. Okay, so...
Give us the rundown.
My oldest, she's 11. She's my favorite. It's hard to say. The second oldest would be my son. He has 9. I don't like him that much. but, I mean, it's weird, though, because me and his mom have a very terrible relationship. And so, due to a lot of complications when he was little, I didn't get to be around him that much. And it wasn't anything I was doing. His mom would always be like, oh, he's sick, or wow, wow, wow. So we never really, like, got close and bonded. And then around this time when I ended up moving to San Antonio and I was gone for a while, she ended up remarrying and getting a dude. Well, when I got back and I was in a better position, I started, you know, visiting him again. He was pretty much like, I don't want to be with you. I want to be with my new dad. And I was like, deuces, you're a dick. So,
yeah,
you know. Anyways, that sounds really, there's more.
Well, I mean, like, that, yeah, it's like that, at least, you know, there's some guy out there, you know, so.
Yeah, sure. No, and he has, you know, a great family and, you know, everything. So it's not like he's missing out on anything. And it's like he's happy. And that makes me happy. So, like, it's
right.
It's
no fine. Reason to, yeah.
You know, when he's 18, I'm gonna have to answer a lot of questions whenever he comes looking for me. But you know, they're easy to answer. You know, it's not anything I'm worried about. So,
right.
I'll worry about that. You know, like 9 years. I have a stepdaughter who's just a little bit younger than him. She's 8. Yeah, she's 8 now. No, she's 9. She just had a birthday. She's 8 or 9. Something like that. I think my son might be 8 or 9 too. I'm really bad with birthdays. So
I have to put that stuff in my phone, like my nephew's birthday and how old he is. Yeah. It's because I'm just not thinking about it, you know?
Oh, yeah.
My mom was born in 1950, so I just do the math every time. She's about to turn 70, so, you know?
Nice. Yeah.
That makes sense. And then, let's see. She's probably also one of my favorites. I would probably say, you know, the two oldest girls are probably my favorites, like, pretty equally. My daughter... And both for pretty similar reasons, because they're just so passionately themselves that it's admirable. So, like, my...
It's good. No identity issues or anything there.
And then I have another daughter. She's 3. The girl that got me into comedy is her mom. We found out that she was pregnant, like, right before I did my first open mic. And she left me... About 4 days after, which is why I tried to kill myself right before the shit hurt. Yeah, yeah. So that was a whole terrible time. And I've never met that child. But she did tell me that she cheated on me and it wasn't mine.
Oh.
But thanks to the internet, I know that that child looks pretty much just like my oldest child.
She's got like a red beard and everything.
Yeah, she has a gorgeous red beard at 3 years old. It's amazing. No, she looks like a redheaded like twin of my oldest at the same age, my oldest daughter, they look identical. So it is what it is. But yeah, the two girls, Lydia and Liala, they are probably my favorites, hands down. Lydia's super artistic, sweet, kind, but she's just wild, dude. She just does not care at all about your feelings or anything, so I'll be like,
that's good yeah. For like you doing comedy and stuff, it's like I'm gonna take you down a peg or two, and then you can talk about it on stage.
Yeah, and like she's always, you know, always joking and stuff like that, but she's also really sweet too, and like she's an artist, so she's always drawing. She's really passionate about her drawing, and that's, you know, but she's also my hype man, so like she goes to school, like, I walk in for, like, a teacher conference, and they're like, oh, you must be the comedian. We've heard that you're on the radio, and you sell Ferraris, and I'm like, that's right.
You're like, hell yeah, dude.
So fucking right. They're like, so you were on Comedy Central? Yeah, that's, I got a Netflix special next week.
Yeah.
What else did you say?
Yeah. What else? Come on, you gotta let me know.
Here's 20.
They're holding it because I was controversial on something.
My oldest daughter, the one that I wrote that joke about, she really did say that. She's a fucking bitch. Like I'm not gonna ever not call her that. But she's smart. She's like in all advanced classes. She's does UIL reading comprehension stuff. She's and cheerleading. She wants to be a cheerleader.
Smart cheerleader. Something's got to give.
I know. I'm just like.
Yeah, she saw that Netflix documentary too, huh?
Yeah.
She's like, I got to cheer now.
Oh my God.
Got all that Matt talk to say, you know.
What's weird though is like, I'm pretty alternative, you know. I guess in my lifestyle, you know, I'm really into like dark stuff and goth stuff, and like, you know, obviously my jokes are very dark, and I'm not known for being a very peppy person.
Yeah.
My ex-wife is Satan. So the fact that we have this beautiful blonde-haired cheerleader who's just like, yeah. But the problem is she's also really fucking mean. She's...
So it's perfect for a head cheerleader, you know? Yeah. They're usually bitches.
She's Regina George for sure. And like, she'll like... We'll be somewhere and I'll say something and she was like, oh, you think you're funny? She was like, you're only funny because you're an old, bald, fat man. I'm just like, go fuck yourself.
You're like scratching out jokes and she's like just roasting. Like,
yeah.
Shit. Yeah. It's just like, come on, I need another 5 minutes. keep giving me shit.
Yeah, she's just constantly like, does not give a fuck at all. Like, I'll be like playing a game, like playing video games, and she'll be in the other room, and I'll die, and I'll be like, oh, why do I keep fucking dying? And she's like, probably because you're stupid. And I'm like, God damn. Like, I was trying to, I can't remember what I was doing. I was working on something. I was working on my car, I guess. I was trying to change out the, like, headlights in my car or something, and she was watching me, and, like, I was doing a terrible job at it. And she was like, hey, Dad. I was like, what? She was like, your autism is showing. I was like, I'm going to fucking kill you. Like, I hope, oh, you know, gosh, that. And I'm like, you can't say that. And she's like, why? She was like, should we go over the things you say? And I'm like, no, let's shut the fuck up. Like, like, go upstairs.
We need to bring, you need to have her come out to comedy open mic next time we have it, so she can maybe thin the herd a little bit for us.
Yeah, we'll put her in between a couple
what are
people.
You doing going up? Just yeah, have her like a side commentary.
We'll give her a god mic. Yeah,
yeah, and we'll then give show her the god mic.
She's like, why are you telling this terrible joke again?
Yeah, Jesus.
She would, I mean, she's
Daddy, is that guy autistic too? Yeah, honey, he is.
Yeah, she doesn't. She doesn't care. And like, the weird thing is her stepbrother's like a huge monster child. They're like the same age and he's petrified of her.
Like, yeah, well, she sounds pretty scared of me. I mean,
she is. Like, I'll show you a picture here in a minute and like, you can just see in her eyes that she will kill you.
She's a fucker.
Yeah, she will murder somebody one day. I shouldn't say this because, like, it's all sounds super premeditated. They're like, so you knew all along she was a killer.
Like, 20 years from now, like, they're going to go back to this episode. This
should be like, there's a warning sign right there. Even her own father said she was capable.
All right. Well, here we go. Yeah, see?
Oh, yeah. She's got some evil eyes going on there.
Oh, yeah. I feel like she can roast the shit out of me.
But see, then again, like... Now she has a shiny medal and she's like much happier.
Yeah.
She's
we're
like,
good now.
She's like, we won.
Yeah, because the first picture was her looking at the competition. She's like, I'm about to crush it, bitch.
I mean, look, she's like holding the trophy and she still looks really pissed off. She's like, we won first place.
She's kind of got that Michaela look or whatever. You know? Michaela's not impressed kind of like smirk going on there.
So we can't win. We can't win extra first place.
Yeah. We didn't win first overall the whole thing. This is bullshit. We got screwed. Yeah.
I just, it's going to be weird. Any more questions?
Yeah, I got one. Okay. I just wanted to know, like, okay, so if you haven't heard JJ, you just heard him do a bit, like he just said, his first joke that he wrote was about him joking about his daughter talking shit to him about his dead mom, which is pretty fucking funny.
Yeah.
But you're not afraid to hit on controversial topics. Like, it's almost like the more controversial, the more like you're at home with bringing it up. And I just kind of, like, do you purposely like seek information out like that, like, or do you just find it and then you see where it's like, all right, like half the people are like, okay, this is funny, and half the people are like, whoa, what the fuck is that? And then you decide to joke about it because of like how, what goes into that process of like picking, because you do like you've got like 3 or 4 jokes that are like, whoa, like he, like the whole crowd is about to fucking,
it must be
pitchfork,
it's been a rough,
and string him up and burn him.
Rough couple
like,
months for JJ. There had many shootings recently.
Right. Yeah. But I just wanted to know, like, in that process, like, what kind of draws you to stuff like that? And, like, you know,
that's. Because I can.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I started off fairly kind of touching on sensitive subjects. My 2 first jokes was one about my son being transgendered. And he was transitioning into a dinosaur. And the other one was, you know, obviously talking about my dead mom. But then immediately after that, I immediately went for like the school shooting jokes. I went for the, just more racially charged things. But I think I've always liked the challenge of how can I get away with this? You know, that's,
yeah.
It's, there's my voice and my style, my whole persona and look is very non-threatening and unassuming.
Yeah.
So when I come out and I'm like, I hate my kids. Everyone's like, oh shit. Like, you know, they immediately are just like, okay, you have my attention, you know? And it's like, he's willing to go on stage and say he hates his kid and call his, you know, 11-year-old daughter a bitch, you know? What is he going to say next? And then, you know, I even wrote at one point of like, what was it? A 3-minute long joke of too soon jokes.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I went, you know, all the, it was after
the Pulse shooting joke.
Oh, yeah, there's the Pulse shooting.
You had that one, but I remember you were, like, too soon, and you kept bringing up other stuff.
It was,
and
then Houston.
Was it you kept going further back in time?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chronologically in order, I started, it was right after the Houston shooting. The whole joke on that was, like, I'm surprised one person could beat Columbine's high score. And
yeah.
That was, and everyone was like, oh, shit, because this was, like, 2 days after it happened. I was like, oh, I'm sorry. And then after that, I was like, too soon. I was like,
the Vegas shooting.
The Vegas shooting.
Yeah.
That was too soon. Then the Texas Tech. Do you think Texas Tech freshmen are taking the guns up thing too seriously?
Oh,
because
yeah.
Because that
oh,
guy
yeah.
shot the
yeah,
cop.
Shot a cop.
Shot
the yeah.
cop. Shot
yeah.
the cop in the head. Which I'm pretty sure I told that joke the night that happened.
Pretty sure you did.
Yeah,
yeah.
Which was good.
It was either the night of or the night, like the next day.
It was the night of because it was at Rico. Yeah.
Oh,
and
my
lady was nervous of me going to Rico because they hadn't found the shooter yet. And it was over by the campus. And I was like, I'll be fine. And she's like, you're a target. Like,
if anyone's getting shot, it's you.
And I'm just like, okay. And yeah, then I'm pretty sure I hit Columbine, Kurt Cobain, everything in between, all the way to Jesus and then the dinosaurs.
Yeah.
And everyone's just like, oh, that's so good. You know, and I never really, that's the fun part of it. You know, it's like going back, but also, some of it, you know, I want people to like, all of this is too soon. All of this is happening so fast, so quickly. Like, why aren't we taking this seriously? Why aren't we, you know, trying yeah. to slow this down? Because I literally can do 5 minutes of too soon jokes and it's still too soon. So, like, that's obviously
yeah.
making things
yeah.
happen faster. I don't know if people ever take it that way at all, you know, and it's like my joke about homeless people. Obviously, I don't want to euthanize homeless people.
Right.
But, you know, that's the way we treat homeless people. You know, they're
yeah,
out of sight, out of mind.
Like, yeah.
like, they're not yep. a real person, you know, and it makes people snap out of that, you know. And it's, I like taking shots, you know, that are just, you know, that people can't talk back about, you know.
Yeah.
Like my whole, you know, segregation, you know, put all the white male students in a school to get rid of school shooters.
Right.
Like, you know, people are like, hey.
Yeah.
Like, come
well,
on.
The problem with the society here and stuff is like you, they have a better chance. Like, people will act more to cancel you than to actually take care of the problem that causes all that.
Exactly.
Because like people just want to be upset because it makes them feel uncomfortable. You know,
right.
It's just like
this
like,
matters to me.
It's like
so
no,
I'm
no,
upset.
Yeah.
And
it's
I feel like the way that I deliver it, it comes off as more. There's no ill intent to it, and people are like, "Oh, he's not serious," which is why I don't know how people haven't called for my head yet. Like, I don't. I mean, the snow bunny joke is going on 2 years now, and
yeah,
yeah,
like
it works.
Every once in a while, you'll have someone in the audience that'll freak out and stuff. But then after that, it's just an argument or whatever. I mean,
yeah, I mean, they don't even come up. I've had one person throw a fit about the snow bunny joke, and it was a white girl at my high school reunion. Also, I performed stand-up at my 10-year high school reunion.
Oh, my God.
Nice. Oh, yeah. That,
because our class...
They wanted me to do it for the 20. I'm like, there's no way in hell.
Our class rapper didn't show up. And
oh,
like,
yeah?
We need entertainment, and I was high as shit.
Is that
I was like,
Booga
give me
Bradshaw?
A
or?
Give me, yeah.
I was trying to think of local rappers. Was it Fix? Like,
no.
I don't know.
These are only the local rappers I
and,
know.
And, yeah, I just walked in, and like... The girl putting on the whole thing, she's like, oh, here's our local celebrity. I was like, none
hey.
Of you fucking liked me.
Hey,
yeah.
You guys
you.
Are lucky I didn't shoot you all up back in high school.
Yeah,
oh.
You know, and then everyone's like, I mean, I don't know. I guess I just walked into the high school reunion. Like, I was just like hot shit because everyone was just like, oh, it's fucking JJ. And like, I'm just all like, you know, I was wearing a, everyone's dressed up. I'm wearing a Space Jam t-shirt, and I'm just like, they're like, you want to do comedy? I was like, give me a fucking mic. And we're at the range.
Oh, nice. So like, it's outdoor on that, like, stage in the back or whatever?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, at the range, and the loud as fuck, everybody can hear me, and I just go off, and I'm just like, I feel I should be allowed to see the N-word. I mean, there's kids there. There's kids. There's old people, you know, hitting golf balls that have no intention of being with our party at all. I'm just like, turn this shit up. And, you know, like,
yeah, like I want them to all come.
Everybody can
hear
me.
If there was a black guy out there, he would probably come find you.
No, there was black guys in my high school that were there at the party, and they're just like, that shit was fucking hilarious. Yeah,
that's pretty funny.
I mean, the comments I usually get is, you know, people walk up and they're like, you really fuck a black guy? And I'm like, sure, why not? Like,
I'm open to new things. So what's up?
Does that make the joke?
Does that make it better or worse?
Yeah, I need it to be real, or else I can't really laugh. But so, like, you're the only person who's actually done an event. Didn't you do a COVID Halloween show or whatever?
Did. Yeah.
Yeah, how did that go? Because, I mean, we tried to do a couple open mics, and then we kind of shut it down just because of the infection rate and everything. And I just saw that you were hosting, like, was that a good show?
Halloween Havoc. So Halloween Havoc I've done the last 3 years. So they invited me to do one the first year. I dressed up as a nun. Halloween's also my birthday. So I dressed up as a nun with a suitcase because I was none your business. fucking classy.
I'm going to pun you to death with this costume.
Yeah, the crazy part is someone showed up dressed as Jesus. His twin brother was dressed as the dude. And then a random guy showed up as a pope. We almost won group costume. And we didn't, none of us knew each other. It was cool. And so that was pretty cool. And then I did it last year as well. I was sexy Pennywise, which worked out. And then
I remember that costume.
That was a good one. That was a great costume. And the funny thing is like I've never seen it before. I just thought a lot of girls, because it was really popular, so I thought a lot of girls would dress as it. And that's my whole idea for Halloween, is I either want to be something really funny as a woman, or I want to ruin a lot of people's time. 4 years ago, I went as Harley Quinn.
Oh, yeah, I can see that ruining people's idea of Harley Quinn for sure.
Sexiest
yeah.
Harley Quinn in the room. But, like, there's all these bad bitches, you know, trying to be Harley Quinn. Like, look at me, how dysfunctional.
Like the Adam Sandler movie, they were all Harley Quinn in that.
Yeah. Oh, that thing was terrible.
It was so bad.
And then I walk in dressed as Harley Quinn, and then everyone's immediately like, because, I mean, I'm a fat bearded guy wearing high-heeled shoes.
Yeah, I got you, bitch.
Tell them the bearded lady sent you.
Yeah, and everyone, like, dudes are taking pictures, like, leaving their Harley Quinns to come take pictures with me. And I'm just like, yeah, what's up? I'm like, grab my fake titties, like, you know, and it just ruins it. So this year I went, I actually wore a man costume for the first time in, like, 5 years, which is sad. But I went as John Thick. Actually, I just wore black pants, a black shirt, a gray tie. And then I just kept coming up with, I sprayed my hair black, and I just kept coming up with ideas. Like, every time someone asked me what I was, I changed it. So it was like, I was like, I'm John Thick. And then, you know, John Wick, John Thick.
But like, was the when you did stand up there, was it like, was it different, because of the COVID crap or whatever? Like,
it was different. Anytime you do an event like that, it's different than doing stand-up, period, because I have people moving equipment behind me. I'm having to, you know, remind people of the costume contest, you know. And
you were just doing, like, jokes in between bands and stuff like that.
You're just emceeing it as a comedian. Yeah.
And, like, I've seen the mistake been made multiple times and by a certain particular person in a comedy scene. Who would do this where he would convince people to let him go on stage at events between bands, and he would run a stand-up, and it would go terrible every single time. So, like, you can get away with telling jokes, but you have to, like, MC the event.
Right, the event's more important than the jokes.
And
just
if
try
someone
to slide
has
some
a
in.
Costume, you have to, like, pull that costume in. So that's when I rely on, you know, my roasting ability and stuff, because then I could be like, oh, yeah, this guy, look at this.
Yeah, look at this sad Superman over here. You're not saving anyone, you bastard.
Right.
And that's more of the mentality that you have to have. It's less of me doing stand-up and more of me just being mildly entertaining, you know, while people are constantly moving around. And the COVID's weird, though, because I've always grown up doing, or I say grow up, but, like, you know, comedy's always, I've had people close to me pretty much always. So when, like, at Jake's or at this place, you know, they're all spread out. We have to be 6 feet away. Everyone's so far away that, like, it's so empty right in front of you, and you're just like, hey, jokes.
That reminds me of all the shows I've done at Jake's. They're so far away, and it's so empty.
Yeah, and it's just, it's so, I like people being right next to me. I like being able to, like, see their responses and, you know, gauge their eyes. So, you know, like, I rely on that for my stick, and you take that away and put them away from me, I'm just like,
you guys like
kind of naked up there.
Yeah, it's yeah. Like, and it's being edgy, you know, like I want to be comfortable. And when you take that away from me, I'm just really like, okay, this could either go. Because, I mean, they got a lot more room to, like, throw shit at me. Like, it's.
Yeah. I've got one more for you. Okay. JJ, you're, like, the, like, clubhouse leader on winner of the Laugh Off. Like, you've won the most. And, like, what people won't, like, what I. Like, you're a dog when it comes to, like, competition. Like, you up your game. Like, it's almost like you play to the level of what the show is going to be. Like, you come to open mics all the time, and you're, like, kind of sit at the back. And you're like, I don't know if I'm trying to fuck with this right now.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll do that. Maybe I won't. Like, I've seen you do that where you're kind of on the fence. But, like, when you show up to a Laugh Off, like, you're all business, and you fuck people up.
Yeah.
So, I guess, like, what in your... In your past or, like, in your psyche, like, what makes you have that edge? Because, like, just, like, meeting you and talking to you, you wouldn't guess that you're, like, a super competitive person. It's like,
yeah.
That fucking trophy's mine, and you're going to have to run through me to get it. And I've done the show against you, and as soon as you get off there, you're like, God damn, he fucking smoked me. And it's like, you're like, God, like, it's almost like, it almost plays into your... hand that you're like, oh, I can get JJ, he's not, but it's like, no, that's not the case. You're like always like the top dog going into those fire, shows, yeah. Like the favorites.
Yeah.
So yeah, what goes into that, like mentally or like some, like growing up, like competitiveness?
It's just the way I was raised. It was always competitive, you know. My sister, I mean, I wouldn't say I had to compete against my sister, but like I always felt that way. Like she was very much, you know, my sister when she was younger. Not anymore, but when she was younger, she was very good at, like, ballet and things that she put her mind to. She was very good. My parents put me in tennis when I was, like, 5 or 6 years old, and I adapted, you know, very quickly. I've always been, I don't know how to describe it, I've always been able to just pick things up and, like, compete.
You
know, whether, like, tennis, I was good. Like, you know, I played at a high level. I played varsity, you know. I played, won a lot of tournaments. You know, I played at a good high level. And it just kind of came to me, you know, like, and it was the attention, you know, like if you're good at what you do and you let your work speak for you, you get that attention. And I'd rather get that kind of attention than get the attention for running my mouth,
yeah.
You know, and be like, you know, this is whatever. But also I'm a very lazy person as well. And so, I mean, I even did debate in high school, you know, and my coach was like, you know, I'm, like, writing these speeches and stuff, going to my first tournament and, like, never done debate before, you know. And I'm, right. Like, practicing against kids in my class, and they're fucking me up. And I'm just, like, barely reading, and you have to read really fast. And, like, I get there, and I win my first tournament. And my coach is like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm
just... like a gamer.
Yeah, like, yeah. I click it on, and I want to win. I want to... And I feel like early on in comedy, when I told people, you know, I was the best, you know,
yeah.
I was like, I'm the king of Lubbock comedy, you know. And then when I kind of came back, you know, me and Weston like each other for a minute, and he kind of blasted me, and he called me a hack and all this other shit, which is really fucking cool. And, which is weird now because me and Wes are, like, amazingly close friends. And, like,
right.
You know, he's a great mentor to me. And so it's funny thinking about that. And I, just out of spite, you know, I refused to do the Laugh-Off. Everyone's like, do the Laugh-Off. You'll be great. And I was like, no, I don't want to. I didn't go to him. I didn't watch him. I didn't even ask to be in it. And that was, like, about a year. So I had, you know, about a year of doing showcases. And showcases are the same way. Like, I want people to remember who I am. And that's why, you know, often I'm like, I don't want to open because I'm going to bring everything. I'm going to throw everything in the kitchen sink. If you give me 5 minutes to open that show, I hope whoever is going after me can rise up to that level because, like, I'm going to leave the audience there.
Right.
So you I've killed shows that way where it's people go after me. They're like,
don't want to follow JJ.
What am I supposed to do now?
Yeah, they're just like
good luck.
Yeah. And it's not.
I've got a real passive bit.
And I feel like I feel like an asshole a lot of the time because you know I'm like, don't put me here, you know. And people are like, well, you're just being an asshole and arrogant. I was like, no, I know what I do, you know. But I come off like you said, unassuming. Where people are like, now it'll be fine, and I'm like, look, I just fucking ruined your day.
Right. So, yeah. No doubt.
And the laugh off was no different. Like I really felt going into it that I had to prove myself, and that it really, like I had to prove myself to Wes. I had to prove myself against Steven, who had won multiple ones at the time. I had to prove myself against Kendall. I had to prove myself against you. Like, I'd never done it. So up until this point, it was all lip service of how good. And then, you know, I had Crooked Windmill Comedy.
Yep.
So I had my little pedestal that I was standing on there, and I was just like, and, you know, being, you know, a contrarian in the scene.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? You know, I want people to respect me for what I do. I want people to see how talented I am, and the best way for me to do that is shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
And so when I got the opportunity to laugh off, you know, I was like, this is my chance to prove who I am. And once I won my first one, I was like, they can't beat me. And once I got that mentality, you know, honestly,
I had the opposite mentality. I'm like, I won one. I'm like, all right, I did it. I don't need to prove myself anymore. And I haven't won since.
Yeah. I still haven't beat Kendall.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know if you're going to get that opportunity.
I don't know if that chance is going to come back.
Yeah, and I'm pretty, but I'll
see. He hasn't been charged yet.
Jesus.
And we could theoretically reinstate him.
Yeah, true.
But and, I don't know if I'd want to get back in the laugh off if I was him either. I think everyone's going to hammer
him. No, I get that. And then, you know, obviously, like, me and Steven are pretty close. I'm pretty sure me and Steven are tied up at the top, you know.
Yeah, it's either you or him. Y'all are really, really close.
No, we're tied. I'm pretty sure we're both at six.
Yeah.
But I do want to point, I got the six faster.
in less shows.
In so less once, shows as well.
Once the pandemic's over and stuff, that'll be the first one. It's just like, we're back. It's just like, who will be the king, Steven or JJ?
I mean, it'll be Cole, obviously. I mean, I saw Cole the other day, and I was just, he came up to my work, and I was like, he was telling people, he was like, yeah, JJ's really funny, you know, he's way funnier than me. And I was like, fuck you. And he was like, why? I was like, because I'll never prove that in the laugh off, like, ever.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel like that's how you separate yourself, you know. And I have people who are just like, and all the younger people out there, if you're listening to this, you can beat me. It's not hard. Like, just do better.
Yeah.
I mean, that's,
just work at it.
And it's, I mean, there's some that I feel like get overwhelmed in the moment and like,
I mean, it's intense. It's the most populated show, and like, you have such a short time to get your jokes out. You have the weird improv round of deal. But I mean, really, I think to me, it's all about the roast.
Oh, yeah.
If you can crush that roast and you get a good draw, you can pretty much take it down.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
you have to have a great 3 minutes. You have to be a memorable 3 minutes.
Yeah,
right.
Your questions, I don't think you're winning or losing in the questions, but if your roast, and it's all about positioning the roast.
Yeah,
like if
five spot.
Yeah.
Where you go last at the roast.
If I roast number one, if I get six, I go first. Like, I'm fucked, you know?
Yeah.
Like, especially, you know, if I have Sweat, Cole, you know, Joe Cash, someone who could come up from behind, you know, and pull it out right out from underneath me. Unless everything else goes really well. And I think you have to have a game plan and a strategy. And I don't think people realize that I go into the laugh off with an idea of how I'm going to dismantle each person individually throughout this entire thing. Like, I had one against Sweat. I won the first one. He won the next one. We were going to, you know, try to break that tie. And I just went for his throat right at the beginning. I mean,
I remember that. Yeah.
The moment I was
on that, I was on that show.
In your 3 minutes, you were attacking him.
Yeah. Like, I'm pretty sure, like, I walked over. I was like, I don't even think we even need to be here. Like, the other four of us could have just gone home after that first set.
Yeah. You told me that. And like,
yeah. I was like, oh, this is fucking over.
I took four people completely out of the show in my first 3 minutes, and I made it exclusively about me and Sweat. And my whole mentality was like, if I go face to face with Sweat, you know, if I make it about us, I can pull this off. You know, like, I want to go toe-to-toe. I want the 1v1, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't, no offense, I knew if I could get the audience to go with what I wanted to do, and if I could get Sweat to feed it.
Oh yeah.
It fucked all you guys.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, yeah. So didn't have a chance at that point.
And then I got to go after Sweat in the roast, and I just fucked him up. And they're like, "JJ wins," and I'm like, "I fucking knew it." I mean, it was a strategy. And I mean, the thing is Rainey was on that show.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
And I pulled Rainey right out of it, which, you know, everyone's just like, "What the fuck?" You know, like,
right.
And it's. I don't think people put that type of game.
Yeah, I think me and Rainey were sitting there, and it's like, well, the participation trophy is going to be fine for this one. This is insane.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, you crazy. Could tell. I mean, yeah, you could tell in the first 3 minutes that, like, yeah, it's lost at this point. You know, let's just go out and have a good showing, you know? Like,
it's the only time I've almost at least started slots a race and
be
war.
Respectable competitors.
Yeah, yeah. It was the only time I almost started a race war. Like, it was just, like, I divided the whole audience. It was like, and everyone's just like, and, like, even Sweat, like, people, like, genuinely, like, we stood just because of the layout of the show. We're on opposite sides. And when everyone else is going, we're staring each other down. And so people are just like, these guys hate each other. Like, there's something between them. And like
I got to stay with my white guy over here.
Yeah.
Like, why is he doing, like, why? And why is he just, but that was just, you know, now Cole, I can't, I mean, I fucked up Cole.
I've always said, and I'm sure he's going to hear this, but the only way we bring that to a level playing field is if all six of us showed up in wheelchairs whenever we came to compete with them.
Yeah, that'd be
the only way. We all just show up and we're like, who knows? Am I handicapped? I don't fucking know.
I remind Cole every time I see him that, you know.
Not that that's why he wins.
I don't know if we're going to be able to get him on this podcast anytime soon. Judging on where I live.
Yeah, there's not a lift up here. Yeah. He probably has something he could, like, strap to that fucking stairway. No, he could figure it out.
He could probably just bunny hop his wheelchair up and look real fucking impressive.
Probably
like,
would, yeah.
He's probably the most fit person.
And I don't mean that, like, and, like, he's not qualified to win because he's stomping everybody out. But, the way that he comes to terms with what happened to him and just literally, like, just rolls over you.
Yeah. I mean, the problem is...
It's fucking hilarious.
The problem is there's two people that I can't roast. That no matter how hard I try, I've gotten Cole good once, but you, Caleb, it never works. I don't know why. I mean,
there's a lot out there that I've gotten been roasted pretty bad.
And like, every time I throw something out there, I'm like, well, Caleb Davis is this, and everyone's just like, like, what the fuck?
Supposed to be good.
And then Cole, and I think the problem is everybody laughs when I roast Cole, but I roast him so bad that they're like, wow, this guy is really...
Yeah, he's really going on that.
Up a homeless guy.
Going on that...
Giving it to the...
The wheelchair angle pretty hard.
I like how I called him homeless.
Yeah. He is, by the way.
He's handicapped, not homeless. There's a difference.
It's H. You got the H's mixed up.
Whatever.
Get all H's.
All that bubbly sodas go into your head.
Words are hard. Words are hard.
Oh man, well this has been a good episode. I guess we can close it out with the vinyl pick. I like to do this to also fuck with the people on our Instagram account who think that this is about music, and we talk about music for 2 minutes at the end.
Hell yeah.
But it's so much fun. I tag all the, like, and you had selected Kid Cudi, which is very interesting because I got this album from Selena Martinez, who got the album from Steven Feldman. And I guess there's some kind of pass the album along, and until he told me to do it, I guess I'll give it to someone else. But so I have that album.
I didn't know where it came from. No, I'm just kidding. I think it's because it's one of the ones that I actually, there's only two I recognize, which was Steve Martin.
Yeah.
And I don't really like Steve Martin's stand up at all, or Kid Cudi. And I've gotten high to Day and Night like 100,000 times. So that's definitely better than Steve Martin. So
Yeah. That's good. That's what I like to put a challenge to people and stuff, especially since I haven't really bought any stuff. And some people are like, I don't know what this is. I'm just picking it because this cover looks like. But I mean, that's the fun part about it.
If you would have told me, I would have brought something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I have a Cindy Lautner's Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
Oh, well, I had the Go-Go's in there.
Oh yeah, you did. And I got probably would have brought the Cure.
That would be good. Like, yeah, I would say, looking at you, you definitely have a lot of Cure albums.
I don't. I have that one.
Oh well, that's the only one you need. Disintegration's the best. Yeah. So you know.
Yeah, I think it's. Do you think I listened to the Cure? Here, what kind of... Well, you guys know me better than that. That's not going to work. Never mind. What kind of music do you
when
think
we
I listen
post,
to?
When we post the Instagram promoting this episode, please go ahead and comment on what kind of music you think JJ listens to.
Yeah.
And then we'll go from there, and we'll do like a little we'll do a little panel or something to see how close or accurate you get.
Yeah.
Probably not close at all.
Probably not.
Probably. Yeah. All right. Well, this has been a great episode of First Stage, episode 8. JJ, how do you have anything you need to promote or whatever coming up? This will drop on Thursday, I believe.
No.
All right.
Unless anybody needs a car. I sell cars as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so if you need an automobile, get at your boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I promise you it'll be the funniest car deal you ever go through. Just
you got no credit? Talk to JJ. All right. We will catch y'all next week. JJ's going to make you howl. Right now. JJ Howl is on First Stage. Yes, he's on First Stage right now.